This is Audible.
Dating-ish. Knitting in the City, Book 6. Written by Penny Reed. Narrated by Joy Nash. Chapter 1. Deep Mind. A neural network that learns in a fashion similar to that of humans and may be able to access an external memory like a conventional Turing machine, resulting in a computer that mimics the short-term memory of the human brain. Source: Google's Artificial Intelligence Program. I was sweating.
Is this seat taken?
My head whipped up from the book I wasn't actually reading to the cafe employee. Her hands rested on the only other chair at my table, and she gazed at me with an affable, expectant smile.
It's taken,
I shrieked, like a lunatic.
But man, I need that chair.
She lifted her hands, recoiling as though the metal singed her skin, and gave me a wide-eyed stare. My attention moved behind her, and I spotted the nearby table of university students, obviously hunting for an extra seat.
Sorry, I didn't mean to...
I shook my head, gathering a deep breath and telling myself to calm down. I'm meeting someone, and he'll be here soon. I'm a little early.
Okay, no problem.
She affixed a polite smile and moved to another table, making the same inquiry. Longingly, I gazed at the booth by the window. Every cafe or coffee shop has that one coveted table, where 2 to 4 friends can gather and spend an afternoon not being overheard while sharing ideas and stories, or where a person can go to work, impervious to the room and its distractions, headphones on, laptop open, losing count of how many lattes and croissants were consumed over an 8-hour day. I did not have that table. I had a mediocre table, set in the center of the coffee shop, surrounded by other mediocre tables. But I would not let my mediocre table get me down. My attention flickered to the door of the cafe, then to the clock above it. He wasn't late. Yet. Squirming, wishing I'd worn anything other than this sweater dress, my eyes returned to the book on my lap. Pay no attention to me. Nothing to see here. I'm just perspiring, wearing a sweater dress in May, and not reading while waiting for my perfect match. Derek Simmons. 6'3" with a well-maintained beard, great smile, gray eyes, tan complexion, and short hair. He didn't work out regularly, which was great, because that meant he didn't expect me to work out either, but enjoyed some outdoorsy activities. Engineer, 39, divorced, 2 kids. Derek and I were a perfect match. That's what findyourpartner.com indicated last Thursday. You have a perfect match. The notification alerted as soon as I signed in. The irony was, I'd been logging in to suspend my account. After almost 2 years of internet dating debacles and equally disappointing men, I was ready for a break. But then I'd received the perfect match message. Therefore, I did what any normal person would do. I internet stalked him. Loves, cooking, hiking, camping, 80s music, film noir, reads, GQ magazine, The Economist, Politico, TV shows, The Walking Dead, Daredevil, and Project Runway. Cooking, film noir, The Economist, and Project Runway? Yes! A man unicorn! Compelled by his unicorn, I emailed him. Hi, Derek. I hope you are well. According to this website, we're a perfect match. This has never happened to me before, so I thought I'd reach out and say hi. Let me know if you'd like to meet up for coffee sometime. I work downtown near the Loop and am free next Monday afternoon. Best, Marie. The next morning, I was alerted that he'd looked at my profile, and I read his response with bated breath. Hi, Marie. Thanks so much for your note. Next Monday works for me. I'm near the university. You name the place and I'll be there. Derek. I loved his response. Direct,
To the point, polite, no detour into unnecessary topics, no typos. To say my hopes were high would be a gross understatement. My hopes had reached astronomical. Since our exchange of emails, I'd tried to curtail those blasted hopes to no avail. I couldn't help my hopes. Don't run away from me, hopes. I can't move that fast in these heels, and we're in this together. But they did run away, hopping onto a spaceship. Likely one of those SpaceX crafts that keeps infuriating Elon Musk by blowing up, leaving me on the ground, waving frantically, which was probably compounding my sweating problem. Arm-waving at one's high hopes while wearing a sweater dress in May is a workout. But he's perfect. This squealing nugget of optimism originated from some dark corner in my brain. Once I found the owner of this voice inside my head, I was gonna... I didn't, honestly, know. On the one hand, I didn't want to be bitter and jaded, trading optimism for pessimism, or worse, nihilism. Nihilism was the worst. And the perpetuators of it had no imagination when it came to accessorizing. All black, all the time? No thank you. I checked the clock over the entrance for maybe the 100th time, just as a man walked through the door. My heart did an odd, prickling thing. But then the sensation eased. He wasn't Derek. The man was too short and had no beard. And he was clearly younger than 39, more like late 20s. With another sigh, I returned my attention to the book in my lap. I didn't even know the title, having grabbed it from the bookstore across the street in a fit of pre-date overthinking-induced insanity. I didn't want to wait for him by scrolling through messages on my phone. I felt like phone scrolling was too prosaic, and I didn't want to be one of those people who just stared forward and people-watched while waiting, even though I loved to people-watch. And I didn't... You're Marie. I glanced up, blinking at the man standing in front of my table, the man who I'd just dismissed as being not Derek. He wasn't looking at me. Rather, his gaze was on the open pages of my book. Yes? His eyes quickly darted to mine, then away as he removed his coat. I'm your date. I frowned because I was surprised. And because I was surprised, it took me a solid 5 seconds to respond. By then, he'd already placed his jacket on the back of his chair. Oh, hi. Hi, please sit down. I gestured to the seat across from mine and belatedly stood, trying not to feel weird about my smile. I never know how big to smile during these things. I missed the days when I could just smile naturally and not have to think about it. Reassessing my date, my eyes flicked down, then up. He was definitely not 6'3". More like 6 foot even, or a little shorter. No big deal. All guys embellish their height on dating sites, except he shaved his beard. Sad face. And again, he looked younger than 39. And his skin was white, paler than the olive complexion I'd been expecting, which was fine, but different from his picture. Derek? I really was confused by the differences between his photo and his reality. Yes, I'm Derek. Derek is my name, that's me. Derek, my date, extended his hand, shook mine with a perfunctory up-and-down movement, and then claimed the seat I'd offered. My smile wavered. My hopes crashed to the earth in a giant, burning cluster comment of disappointment and fail. I braced myself. We hadn't made it past the first minute of awkward, and I already knew things weren't going to work out. Derek was not my perfect match. We had zero chemistry. No spark when we touched. No shock or magic voodoo juju awesomeness. No nothing. And no eye contact. He wouldn't even look at me. Inwardly, I sighed and cringed, wondered if we'd be able to wrap this up quickly so I could run to the drugstore for some tampons before meeting my knitting group for wine and yarn and then more wine.
Outwardly, I pressed my lips into a shape I hoped resembled a smile and sunk into my chair. My eyes sought the clock over the door. It was only 3:14. My record for a coffee date was 20 minutes. I wondered if I could break it today. "Did you want anything?" I motioned to the cup in front of me, keeping my voice light. "I grabbed a drink already." "No," he said, a slight business-like smile affixed to his features. "Let's get started."
"Started?"
Derek was looking at his watch. He pressed a button. He let his hands drop to his lap. Only then did he lift his eyes to mine. And then he blinked, his smile slipping infinitesimally, as though the sight of me was unexpected. I lifted my eyebrows, waiting, because apparently it was time for us to get started, whatever that meant.
"Hi," he said.
His gaze moved over my features, his smile growing hazy, more genuine. Huh. He had brown eyes. His brown eyes held me momentarily transfixed, and not just because they weren't gray, as he'd listed on his page, but because they were expressive and remarkably attractive. His hair was also brown, but longer than it had been in his pictures. Truly, he really did look significantly different than his profile, surely not just because of the absent beard. Nevertheless, despite being beardless, his face was handsome. High cheekbones, strong nose, a jaw that was decidedly square. His eyes were remarkably wide and round, but somehow they suited him perfectly, and I decided his eyes were my favorite part of him. I allowed my smile to mirror his, my gaze dropping momentarily to his very nice lips, which honestly struck me as oddly pouty for a man. "Okay, let's give him a chance." Even though he misrepresented his height, age, and eye color. So weird. Who does that?
"Hi,"
I finally replied, examining him, my reporter's spidey sense tingling. Derek flinched at my returned greeting, his eyes narrowing, and he frowned.
"You're Marie?"
His tone was distrustful?
"Yes,"
I nodded once, slowly cataloging his clothes. "And you're Derek?"
"Of course I'm Derek. Who else would I be?"
No. I couldn't wait to tell Sandra about this guy.
Moving on. He shook his head again as though shaking himself and frowned at the table.
"So, Marie, you're a writer."
"That's right. And you're an engineer," I asked, no longer in date mode.
"Your profile said you've had one serious relationship in the past. Is this true?"
Derek lifted his dark eyes to mine again, and this time his expression struck me as carefully neutral.
"Yes," I gave him a pointed look. "Everything on my profile is true."
It didn't feel necessary to add that, though I'd only been in one serious relationship, I'd had relationships in my early 20s, all of which, except for my last boyfriend, had been bad and or unhealthy decisions. So yes, technically, everything on my profile was true.
"Not like your profile, buddy. Not even your eye color is right."
He didn't seem to catch my hint.
"As a woman in your 30s, what are you most looking for in a companion?"
I flinched, unaccustomed to such severely direct questions right off the bat. Not that I was opposed to directness, just that it wasn't typical on first dates. In my limited experience with online dating, the order of actions was usually as follows.
1. Both people smile and try not to betray their thoughts as expectations based on photos are either surpassed, met, or disappointed. 2. I shake off initial impression and try to have an open mind. Talk about inconsequential things like movies and the weather. 3. I don't get hopes up if things are going well. 4, I never commit to seeing him again in order to avoid appearing overeager. 5, I wait 3 days, then text. If the text is not returned, forget him and move on. I'd only sent a text to 4 guys over the last 2 years. 3 had returned my message. None had lasted longer than the 3rd date, and no one had ever felt right. I guess. I cleared my throat, glancing over Derek's shoulder to the busy cafe behind him as I attempted to parse my thoughts. As a woman in your 30s was a strange way to frame the question. What did my age have to do with anything?
So, you would say that you don't know what you want?
He sounded curious. My gaze cut back to his. Yes, I know what I want.
But you don't want to tell me.
I don't mind telling you. I studied him for a moment, gathered a deep breath, and spoke the truth. I'm looking for the right person. I'm looking for my perfect match. Derek's expression didn't change, and he continued to gaze at me with a patient, watchful expression. But when I didn't continue, he angled his head forward as though to say, "Go on."
"And?"
"And that's it. I'm looking for the right person."
"Ah, okay. And what traits will this right person have? Starting with the most important."
"What?
And if you could rank each attribute on a 10-point scale of importance, where 10 is the most important, that would be very helpful."
Now I openly frowned at him. "You want me to rank personality traits on a 10-point scale, starting with what I find most important?"
"Not just personality traits, physical attributes as well. Or, if you like, you can start with your love dialect."
"My love dialect?"
"Correct. What form of affection is most meaningful to you, and so forth."
We stared at each other. He continued to regard me placidly with a friendly, albeit detached, smile. Meanwhile, I was plotting my escape. Polite social discourse be damned. Usually I didn't agree to meeting face-to-face unless I'd spoken to the potential date on the phone first, ensuring we had some level of chemistry. But I'd made an exception for Derek, because he was supposed to be my perfect match. But clearly the system didn't factor in the degree to which a person is a loon, says the sweating woman who had astronomical and therefore understandably annihilated hopes. "Look in the mirror, loony bird." I was just about to make an excuse when he announced,
"We should engage in small talk. How was your day?"
"Pardon me? Nuts. He's completely nuts."
"Or, if you don't wish to discuss your day, we could talk about hobbies."
He offered cordially, gesturing to my lap.
"Do you read for work or pleasure?"
Distracted by his rapid and bizarre subject change, I responded unthinkingly, "I usually read for fun." I'm sure the look I gave him was one of complete bewilderment.
"Really? Does kidnapping and sexual torture sound like fun to you?"
My mouth fell open and I reared back in my seat. This guy wasn't a loon. He was completely insane. I managed to sputter, "What are you suggesting?"
"The 120 days of Sodom."
He tilted his chin toward my lap. I flinched, a short, aggrieved, disbelieving laugh bursting from my lips. "Oh my God." Then to the table I said, "You're completely crazy." Derek frowned at me, as though I'd confused him. His eyes bounced between the table and me.
"What?"
"You're completely crazy," I repeated, reaching behind me for my coat.
"I'm crazy?"
If he hadn't just suggested 4 months of sodomy, I might have found the concerned wrinkle between his eyebrows adorable. But given the fact that sexual torture wasn't far from his mind, I decided the wrinkle wasn't adorable. It was distressing. "Yes, you're nuts. Don't email me. Don't call me. Pretend we never met." I was no longer sweating as I pulled on my jacket and grabbed my things. This was an odd quirk about my personality. Put me in an innocuous situation where I need to be normal, and I'm bouncing off the walls. but send me into a dangerous or emergency situation, and I'm cool and focused. Derek, or whatever his name was, started to stand, so I held out my hand. Don't stand up. Don't even look at me, and don't think about following me either, or I'll call the police. Lunatic. Without another glance, I wove through the tables and out the door, anger, indignation, and frustration spurring my movements. Wow. 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 The first thing I'd do upon arriving home would be reporting that freak to findyourpartner.com. The second thing I'd do was delete my profile. I'd been with David, my ex, for 6 years, and because we'd met in college, I'd missed out on the early years of internet dating. No great loss. Clearly, it wasn't for me. I'd had some terrible first dates since breaking up with David, but this one took the cake. It took all the cakes. In less than 20 minutes, my perfect match had irrevocably propelled himself to the top of my worst date list. Thanks, dating algorithms, for pairing me with a psycho. I moved to retrieve myself from my purse. I needed to call my friend Sandra immediately. I couldn't wait until midnight to tell someone about this fiasco. But then my attention snagged on the spine of my book. The book I'd purchased in a rush so as not to seem prosaic for Derek. And I stopped short, gaping at the title and author. It read, The 120 Days of Sodom by Marquis de Sade. Chapter 2. Artificial Diamond, a.k.a. Synthetic Diamond, Cultured Diamond, or Cultivated Diamond. A diamond created in a laboratory rather than by geological processes. While the term synthetic is associated by consumers with imitation products, artificial diamonds are made of the same material, pure carbon crystallized in isotropic 3D form, and are, in fact, real diamonds. Source, 16 CFR Part 23, Federal Trade Commission. Roaring laughter, complete with heads thrown back, hands over stomachs, and tears rolling down faces. This was how my 6 knitting group friends reacted to the punchline of my date with Derek. Elizabeth, my sarcastic with a heart of marshmallow emergency room physician from Iowa, held her face in her hands. A long rope of braided blonde hair fell over her shaking shoulders. Sandra, my potty-mouthed psychiatrist from Texas, was sprawled backward on the sofa, her green eyes screwed shut as she clutched her abdomen, silent hysterics apparently having momentarily paralyzed her. Ashley, my silly, quick-witted ICU nurse from Tennessee, was bent to one side, her face planted into the couch at her left. She'd Skyped in from Green Valley, Tennessee, where she'd moved over the spring to be closer to her family. We'd placed a laptop on a chair to one side of the living room, close enough to the circle that we were all visible, but far enough away so that she could still see all of us. Fiona, my graceful and wise retired CIA field agent from Baltimore, gazed at me with her dark, soulful eyes, an expression between sympathy and reluctant humor warring for dominance. Kat, my poised, sweet, usually shy administrative assistant and woman of mystery from Boston, had folded her arms on the coffee table and hidden her face, but her giggle snort gave her away. Janie was the exception. My walking, talking encyclopedia of Amazonian adorableness, also from Iowa, wasn't laughing. She looked perturbed. But I was laughing. How could I not? What other choice did I have? Crying? Nah. I was finished with crying. Crying was my past. Laughing was my present and foreseeable future. Unless it was crying induced by laughter. Or an allergy to cats. Because I'd recently decided I would be adopting cats. All the cats. Forget men and romance. The answer to my aching loneliness would be all the cats. Tears! On my face! Sandra waved her hands in front of her eyes and then wiped at the corners. I'm wearing mascara, thank God, so y'all can get the full effect. What are you talking about? Elizabeth, still in her ER scrubs, asked from Sandra's left, nudging her with an elbow while snickering. What full effect? You can literally see how funny this story is by the black trails of mascara running down my face. Sandra pointed to her cheeks, subduing an errant giggle. Sodomy jokes. They get me every time.
I didn't know that book was even in print. The 120 Days of Sodom by Marquis de Sade?
Janie, the only one who hadn't laughed like mad, frowned at me.
I know it was translated a few years ago, but I thought you could only get it as an e-book.
She stood, hovering to one side of the couch, several red curls having come loose from her bun, her black horn-rimmed glasses giving her the aura of a stern librarian. Holding a 2-liter bottle of water, she was stretching her back and appeared to be agitated by the news that the 120 Days of Sodom was available in paperback, yet no one had seen fit to notify her. Everything irritated her these days. She'd had the worst morning sickness for 14 weeks and had been dwelling in a perpetual state of perturbed dissatisfaction, her words, not mine, since entering her second trimester. This was her first pregnancy, but I wouldn't be surprised if it turned out to be her last. How is it possible that you didn't read the title of the book before you bought it? Fiona's sympathetic look persisted as she rubbed her belly. Like Janie, she was also pregnant. Unlike Janie, she seemed to take her pregnancy woes in stride. Where Janie was remarkably tall and carried her pregnancy entirely in front, Fiona was short and her rounded belly was visible from all angles. This was Fiona's third child with her husband, Greg. They'd been married for 15 years and were still ludicrously in love with each other. But strangely, it wasn't at all nauseating. Neither of them were perfect, and they embraced each other's faults with adorable aplomb. Hashtag relationship goals. I don't know, I just rushed into the bookstore, which, as it turns out, was an erotic bookstore, so make note of that, and grabbed the book closest to the cashier. I was in a hurry. But why did you need a book at all? This question came from Kat, the youngest member of our knitting group at 24, and also historically the least vociferous. Although lately, I'd say during last year in particular, she'd become more talkative. I didn't want to be that person staring at my phone. It felt too normal. I wanted to seem cultured, interesting. Even as I said the words, they felt puerile. God, I hated dating. I hated it. Hate. You are cultured and interesting. Elizabeth shot me a pointed look before returning her attention to the sweater in progress on her needles. Yes, but you don't know how it is out there. Men have this FOMO, fear of missing out. I feel like they're always looking over my head, looking for her. First impressions count a lot when meeting an online match for the first time. I don't know how to explain. It's like the stakes are higher these days. You don't warm up to a person. No one seems to have time for that. You only have 15 seconds or less to make a good impression before the person makes up their mind. That sounds very stressful. Ashley sighed discontentedly. Whatever happened to taking the time to actually know a person?
People don't do that anymore.
Sandra flicked her wrist toward Ashley's image on the laptop. It's all swipe left for sex or right to murder. Not quite, but yeah, it's pretty bad out there. Kat chuckled. The sound was shaded with sorrow. Split decisions based on what a person looks like, how impressive their job title is, and how much money they make. It's all about ego with these men. As if people can't just like each other anymore. They have to check certain boxes. At least that's how my last few dates felt. That's unhealthy. Sandra appeared to be offended on Kat's and my behalf. And it's unwise. I was just reading a study out of Princeton where perceptions of attractiveness change dramatically over time. A group of college students rated each other's attractiveness at the beginning of a semester and then again at the end.
Lo and behold, the best-looking guy and gal at the beginning were more often considered dogs by the end because they were fundamentally unlikable.
Not all of us can be admired from afar by genius hackers disguised as waiters, Sandra.
I gave my friend a teasing smile, referring to her husband, Alex. They'd been married just under a year and a half and were the image of marital bliss.
Can we go back to your date? You didn't realize until after you left that by asking if kidnapping and sexual torture sounded like fun to you, the guy was referring to your book and not trying to make a lewd proposition?
Kat asked. She was sitting on the floor and gazing at me, her elbow on the coffee table, her chin in her palm. Exactly. I nodded once, remembering the odd encounter and feeling both embarrassed and indignant. However, in my defense, I'd been very distracted by his bizarre behavior by that point. Like I said, he didn't look at all like his picture.
I hate it when that happens.
Kat lamented flatly, lifting her martini glass toward me. Thank you. I mirrored her gesture, lifting my glass as well.
Why do they do that? What's so difficult about accurately representing oneself on dating websites?
I know I missed out on online dating. Elizabeth twisted the end of her braid thoughtfully. But it seems like this is par for the course, right? The picture not matching the person?
Yes. Well, sometimes. Except in this guy's case, it didn't make sense.
How so?
Fiona pressed, her gaze moving between her knitting and me. She was working on a baby hat with yarn so soft it felt magical. For one thing, he was heavier in his picture online, softer in the middle, less fit.
That's your type, right?
Sandra licked the edge of her glass, peering at me.
You like the cuddly kind.
Exactly, but this guy in real life clearly worked out several times a week. At the gym. With weights. I made a face of distaste.
Who misrepresents that? Usually it's the other way around.
You said his eyes were the wrong color too, right? Ashley had righted herself from her couch and was also sipping from a martini glass. As much as possible, she tried to coordinate her beverage choices in Green Valley with ours in Chicago.
Correct. His profile had listed gray, but his were brown.
Not that I minded at all, I rushed to add, because he had gorgeous eyes. I don't know why he'd list the wrong color.
But no beard, Ashley added. Her Tennessee twang and wrinkled nose made the observation sound like an accusation.
What kind of a man claims to have a beard, posts pictures of said beard, and shows up beardless?
That just ain't right.
Sandra nodded her agreement, pointing at the laptop screen and Ashley's image.
You don't cry beard. Where is the trust after that?
Gone,
Ashley proclaimed with a snap. The sound of Fiona's front door opening and closing had me glancing over my shoulder distractedly. I spotted Greg and Alex strolling into the family room. The tall Brit was dressed in his exercise gear, but he didn't look like he'd gone running yet, and Alex naturally wore his signature black.
But why did he do it?
Fiona asked, drawing my attention back to her.
Do you think he was ashamed of how he looked? Or do you think he used someone else's picture?
Alex crossed to his wife, but instead of sitting next to her, he bent and whispered something into her ear, his fingers fiddling with the strand of her hair and then stroking her neck. She nodded and winked at him as he leaned away. He straightened and left the room, strolling into the kitchen without speaking to anyone else. Alex Green, gorgeous and genius hacker, was an unending mystery. He wasn't sullen, though he was distrustful and remarkably socially awkward. At first, his silent, withdrawn ways took some getting used to. As a group, we'd warmed to him, as a lurking figure in the background. We'd even embraced it, mostly because he always wore whatever we knit him, and seemed genuinely surprised and grateful for every nice thing sent his way. I made him cookies once, and he gave me a hug that lasted for what felt like a full minute. He'd even thanked me for them several months later. Having Alex around made us all feel like we had a little brother to spoil. A tall, dark, handsome, brooding little brother. Admittedly, the dynamic was unusual, but I think that's what made it remarkable.
That's the thing,
I shrugged, sitting back in my seat. The guy was attractive, very attractive, in an efficient, nerdy, but fit way. He just didn't look anything like his picture. Maybe it was someone else in the picture. So weird. Kat wrinkled her nose. Why are men so weird?
We have to be weird,
Greg cut in, settling on the couch next to his wife and tucking her under his arm.
Because if you knew how simple we were, you'd figure out a way to procreate and find satisfaction without us.
He held up his hands before any of us could contradict.
Wait! Now I know what you're going to say, that you already find satisfaction without us. You don't need another person in order to be happy.
Sure, okay.
Just like men don't need a woman in order to be happy.
Except, people need people. Being alone might yield satisfaction, but it's not what we all really want.
Finding true fulfillment for myself without men? Without a romantic relationship? Now that sounded like a worthwhile endeavor. My attention lingered on Fiona and Greg as he placed a soft kiss on her temple and nuzzled her hair with his nose. He whispered something to her and she smiled, her hand reaching for his where it rested on her shoulder, their fingers tangling together. They were such a unit. My heart twisted uncomfortably and I recognized the root emotion. Envy. Of note, it's already possible for women to procreate without men. Janie, still looking perturbed, rubbed the base of her spine and glared at Greg. Through a process called somatic cell nuclear transfer, you take cells from a woman and...
I don't want to know.
Greg shook his head adamantly.
Let me live in my delusions of being essential. Can't you see my male ego is as fragile as it is beautiful? And speaking of fragile male egos, where is Nicoletta?
Elizabeth smirked, turning her work in progress and leaning forward to grab her drink. He's in Los Angeles filming until the end of the month, but I'll let him know you're missing him. Nico, or Nicoletta, as we'd started calling him, was Elizabeth's husband. He also happened to be a movie star and comedian. When he was in town, he was a regular fixture at Knit Night, except he crocheted instead of knitting.
I'm not missing him. Not precisely. Greg shrugged. It's just that he's a good running partner.
What about Alex? I asked. Why don't you ask him?
I did. He says he doesn't like to run unless it's from law enforcement. Plus, swimming is his exercise of choice.
Greg made a face. You could go with Quinn. Janie's eyes moved to the side, thoughtfully. Except he likes to run early in the morning.
Yes, I know. I'm familiar with Captain Never Sleeps.
Greg mumbled, referring to one of his nicknames for Quinn. I thought you and Matt were running this evening, Fiona asked softly.
We were. He sighed, and it sounded aggrieved. Or we are. But he's late. Some work business. Should be here any minute.
Who's Matt? Elizabeth asked distractedly, her eyes on the knitting pattern to her left.
Our next-door neighbor.
Fiona lifted her chin toward the far wall, presumably to where this Matt person lived.
He's a professor at the university. In computer science, I think.
Fiona has seen his penis,
Greg added cheerfully. Wait, what? I could almost hear everyone's eyebrows raise in unison as our collective attention shifted to Fiona.
Really? Do tell.
Of course, Sandra was the first to recover from Greg's odd declaration. Fiona gave her husband an exasperated look, then sought to explain.
I used to babysit him when we were kids back in Baltimore. Our parents know each other. He moved out here last Christmas, and by chance we ended up neighbors.
He also has a TIG welder.
Greg glanced at his watch.
Oh, good.
Janie twisted to one side, then the other, stretching.
I've been looking for someone with one of those.
Of course you have. Elizabeth gave Janie a bewildered but amused look.
Why do you need a TIG welder?
I don't need it now, but it's always good to know someone who can weld, just in case. Janie, sitting on the arm of the couch, picked up and fiddled with her work in progress. She crocheted rather than knit and was currently working on a baby blanket.
I agree with Janie.
Ashley's voice sounded from the laptop speaker. It's good to surround yourself with professionals or hobbyists of varying skill sets. At least, that's what my brother Cletus always says.
You know what I could go for? A professional hand holder.
Kat spoke to the green ball of yarn on the coffee table.
I love holding hands. There's nothing like it. I'd pay money for someone to hold hands with me.
I'll hold hands with you.
Elizabeth smiled at Kat.
Anytime.
Kat gave Elizabeth a warm smile.
Thanks. I may take you up on that.
I think those people exist, Sandra said, completing her row and glancing at Kat. They charge hourly.
What are you talking about?
Elizabeth chuckled, shaking her head.
Very funny, Sandra.
Fiona gave Sandra a patient smile.
It's true,
Sandra defended, her eyes wide. They're called professional cuddlers. We have them here in Chicago. They'll come to your apartment, or sometimes you meet in a studio with a bunch of other cuddlers, or even a hotel. I wrinkled my nose, swapping a disbelieving stare with Kat. But then Janie said, she's right. It's a real thing. Check out cuddlebunnies.com, and there's a book called The Cuddle Sutra.
You're making this up.
Kat's eyes bounced between Janie and Sandra.
No, we're not, I swear.
Sandra shook her head vehemently.
She's not making it up,
Alex said, strolling out of the kitchen.
There are even professional dry humpers in New York, and I think a few in Los Angeles.
My mouth fell open in shock while Elizabeth, Kat, Fiona, and I blinked at each other.
I think you mean prostitutes, Greg offered dryly.
No. Alex almost smiled, almost, and met Greg's sardonic glare.
Not prostitutes. You're telling me people pay for this, cuddling and dry humping with no penetration.
Greg was just as disbelieving as the rest of us.
Sounds like a complete waste of resources.
I only forgave him that comment because I knew Greg. I knew he was being purposefully obtuse to make a point. He often did this, espouse opinions that were the opposite of what he believed in order to make a point.
Yes, that's what we're telling you,
Janie responded. Clients pay by the hour, or a fraction of an hour. Based on the Washington Post article I read, most cuddlers have regular clients, and the idea is grounded in the same foundation as touch therapy and Reiki, only with less oversight and training in most cases. Kat sighed loudly, drawing my attention to her. Her expression was one part confused and one part distressed.
That's so sad.
What's sad? Sandra asked evenly.
That a person would resort to paying for cuddling, for human touch.
Kat now looked completely distressed.
I don't know. I think it makes a lot of sense.
Sandra moved her attention to her knitting as Alex sat next to her.
And I don't consider it sad, necessarily. Think about the elderly, for instance, those with no family. Cuddling, holding another person's hand can bring so much comfort. Babies need it in order for their brain to develop correctly. And if a person is alone in the world, why shouldn't they have an opportunity to receive that comfort?
Janie nodded.
And what about people who don't have time for a relationship, or aren't ready for one?
Her tone was thoughtful, more like pre-pregnancy Janie, as she philosophized. Human touch, affectionate touch in particular, has been shown to be necessary for sustained happiness. If a person can't be in a relationship for whatever reason, professional cuddlers provide a valuable resource. Once again, Kat and I shared a glance. Likely because we were the only two single people in the room. Kat swallowed, and I saw she did so with some effort, a flash of something like pain shadowing her expression. She then cleared her throat, her gaze lowering to her yarn.
I guess, when you put it like that, professional cuddlers are a better choice than other behaviors, which might be seen as destructive.
Exactly, Janie said.
All things considered, I believe paying a professional for a defined service where expectations are clear-cut is far superior to using another person for physical contact and potentially engaging their feelings with no plans for reciprocation.
Well, yeah,
I guess I see your point. Elizabeth's tone was serious, almost grave, and her stare became unfocused. After the death of a loved one, for example?
Sorry, Ashley piped up, but no, it still sounds creepy to me. I wouldn't want some stranger paying me to touch them, even for therapeutic reasons.
Says the nurse.
Alex teased.
Ha ha, well played. Ashley gave him a face, even though her laughter and their banter broke the somewhat tense moment.
You ladies always have the most enlightening conversations,
Greg said, stroking his chin as he moved his narrowed gaze over the room. Meanwhile, Janie swallowed the last of her water, then glared at the bottle as though it had insulted her.
It's empty.
Let me get you some more. I stood and stretched, happy for an excuse to move around. Do you want more ice?
Janie nodded, handing over the bottle with one hand and rubbing her belly with the other.
The dictator in my stomach says yes.
Fiona giggled.
Dictator. A knock sounded from the direction of the front door, and Greg stood from the couch, sharing a small smile with his wife.
Autocrat, fascist, emperor or empress, whatever. Its Royal Highness wishes for ice.
Janie, you make me never want to be pregnant.
Kat frowned with concern at our friend. Are your muscle cramps getting any better?
No. And now I'm peeing myself every time I stand up, or when I walk, or sit, or lie down,
Janie said, her tone surly.
But don't use my pregnancy as a data point. Look at Fiona. She's glowing.
Okay, Matt and I are heading out. Do you want me to pick anything up?
Greg asked, standing at the precipice to the family room, a figure hovering just behind him for a brief moment before stepping to Greg's side. I glanced at them on my way to the kitchen and then stopped short, doing a startled double take, because the man standing next to Greg was that man. That man. My not-perfect match from the coffee shop. Here. Now. Standing in Fiona's apartment.
What the flipping fracking fresh hell is this?
It's you, I blurted before I knew what I was doing, raising an accusing finger at the newcomer.
It's him!
Chapter 3. Atlas Robot. A high-mobility, humanoid robot designed to negotiate outdoor, rough terrain. Atlas can walk bipedally, leaving the upper limbs free to lift, carry, and manipulate the environment. The design and production of was overseen by the DARPA, an agency of the United States Department of Defense. Source, Boston Dynamics.
Derek's eyes darted to mine and they widened with recognition and surprise.
It's him? Sandra looked up from her work in progress, as did everyone else.
Him who?
Derek! I shook my hand in his direction and had no compunction about adding, the weirdo from the coffee shop!
Weirdo?
Derek asked, standing a bit straighter, his forehead wrinkling in that way I thought might have been adorable before I determined he was a psychopath.
That's Derek?
Elizabeth's frowning gaze bounced back and forth between us. He lifted his hands, palms out in the universal gesture for calm down.
I can explain.
Matt? Fiona questioned sharply, her brow creasing with suspicion.
Yes, I'm Matt, but she's also correct.
He lifted his chin toward me and said evenly,
I was Derek. Or sometimes I'm Derek.
I flinched, my mind a muddled mess.
What?
How can someone sometimes go by a different name?
Sometimes you're Derek?
Sandra set her knitting to one side, her tone gaining a hard edge.
What does that mean?
You filthy bird,
Greg sounded delighted.
Have you been posing as a fetishist named Derek?
What? No.
Derek, or Matt, or whatever his name was, turned his big brown eyes to me and shook his head.
It's not like that.
Then what is it like?
This question came from Alex and plunged the room into stark silence. Alex was, well, he was odd, and his voice had a certain quality, one that forced you to listen to it and to him. But presently, something about his tone made the fine hairs on the back of my neck stand up straight. He who claimed to be Matt glanced at Alex and he surveyed the younger man. It was in pursuit of science. An experiment.
An experiment?
Alex asked, looking dissatisfied with the answer.
What do you mean, experiment?
Sandra stood, her hands on her hips.
It's what's called a deception study. Self-reported behaviors are riddled with bias, so we observe in a non-traditional laboratory setting. Only,
Matt turned an apologetic smile on me.
I'm not usually the one taking the interview. Dr. Merrick usually fills that role.
Who is Dr. Merrick? I asked, dumbly, not at all following the conversation.
Derek,
Matt said simply, as though this explained everything.
What?
Elizabeth was growing impatient.
Derek is Dr. Merrick. Dr. Derek Merrick.
Matt clarified.
What an unfortunate name,
Janie said with a small frown.
What are you talking about? It rhymes.
Sandra shook her head at our friend. I've always wanted a rhyming name, but nothing rhymes with Sandra. Crossing my arms, I ignored Sandra's nonsense and pointed my questions at Matt. So you're not Derek?
No, not usually. I'm not as good at the interviews as he is.
He scratched his neck, adding self-deprecatingly,
or much else for that matter.
You mean you've done this before? Posed as your friend? Elizabeth demanded.
No, I don't pose as my friend. He's my colleague. The profile for Derek Simmons is fake. We created it based on aggregate preferences of our target sample group. We have permission from the website's owners.
Both Sandra and Elizabeth made similar expressions, as though they were absorbing this information and understood his meaning. Meanwhile, I shared a confused look with Kat.
In English, please?
She asked softly.
Oh, sorry.
He gave her a polite, contrite smile.
We're looking for subjects, or participants, if you prefer that word, who are in their 30s, are working professionals, and have never been married. We looked for patterns and responses for this demographic. We found clusters of likes and dislikes, then created fictional profiles to match these subjects' preferences.
Every word out of his mouth grated. So you created a fake profile to match my likes and dislikes?
Not just yours, but women like you. You know, the same shows, interests, music preferences. You'd be surprised how similar you are to other women with your demographics. Single, age, education, and income level. Actually, you're all basically the same person.
I winced, feeling as though I'd been slapped, or at least all the air had been driven out of me. The room plunged into dead quiet. Women like you. You'd be surprised by how similar you are. You're all basically the same person. That stung. But why did those words sting so much? You don't know her. This accusation, for it truly sounded like an accusation, came from Janie. Just because an individual shares common interests with a similar demographic profile doesn't make them the same person. We all enjoy wine. That doesn't make us basically the same person. Her voice lifted until she was nearly shouting. Alex had stealthily approached during her rant and wrapped his arm around her shoulders. Janie appeared ready to jump over the couch and strangle Matt.
Yes, of course.
Matt turned a smile to Janie, laced with frustration.
I suppose I should apologize. I have a habit of summarizing life into if-then statements, or categorizing people in terms of the aggregate data available on groups with similar profiles. It's an occupational hazard, and I truly do not mean any offense.
What is your occupation? Sandra asked, squinting at him.
I'm a computer scientist with a focus on AI.
AI? Kat challenged.
Artificial intelligence.
Sandra's squint intensified. You mean like that creepy movie with the evil robot? Ex Machina, and she wasn't evil, she just wanted her freedom. This came from Ashley over Skype. And would y'all move to the side? I can't see a thing. She was evil. She killed that adorable Domhnall Gleeson, Sandra said. We'll have to agree to disagree, Ashley shrugged. Domhnall Gleeson doesn't do it for me.
What did you mean by deception study?
Elizabeth brought us back on track. I thought those required an informed consent after participation, so subjects could opt in or out once the data is collected.
We've received approval from our ethics board to conduct a one-time interview and ascertain true preferences from the subjects.
Matt's tone was conversationally academic, and it made me want to give him paper cuts. Lots and lots of paper cuts.
Usually we consent after the interview, but Marie...
He stumbled over my name, his gaze flickering to mine, then away.
Left before I could administer post-hoc consent. As I've said, I'm not very good at conducting the interviews.
His gaze shifted to me again and held. His smile was carefully detached, like he'd erected a wall between us.
Again, I apologize if I ruined your afternoon by being a weirdo.
No one else said anything for a long moment, during which I wrestled with this new information. My date had been part of an experiment. I had been an experiment. And I was just like every other woman out there in my demographic. Apparently, we're all the same. I think, on some level, we'd all like to believe we're special, that something, be it tangible or intangible, makes each person unique. I considered myself a confident individual. Yes, of course, I knew I had room for improvement. I didn't think I was in any way perfect, but I'd reached a point in my life where I was happy with myself as a whole. I didn't want a life partner to complete my life, but as a complement to my life. Yet something about being told, statistically, I was basically the same as every other woman with similar demographics made me feel immeasurably insignificant and wretched.
You're not a good guy, Janie said, breaking the silence with her flat declaration. You should know that so you can try to change yourself for the better.
Derek, Matt, glanced at her, inspecting her openly in a way that reminded me of a scientist inspecting a curious-looking insect. He didn't appear to be at all offended by her comment or surprised by it. The irony here, which wasn't at all lost on me, was that the way he looked at Janie was how she used to look at people when they said something surprising. Now, pregnant, she just looked at everyone with varying degrees of intense irritation. I gathered a deep breath, ignoring a sudden urge to curl up on Fiona's comfy sofa and request Sandra spoon me. She would if I asked. Sandra loved to cuddle, and I hadn't cuddled with another person since my ex. I miss cuddling. Maybe I do need a professional cuddler.
Greg cleared his throat, drawing my attention to him. He was looking at me with pointed intensity, a silent question behind his concerned gaze.
Are you okay?
Quickly, I grabbed a hold of my emotions and yanked them back, pasting a smile on my lips. It was another of those situations where I didn't know how widely to smile.
Well, I guess that explains that.
I tried shrugging, imbuing my voice with false bravado.
No harm, no foul.
Fiona's tone was infinitely gentle as she said, Marie, we should all get back to our evening.
I said firmly, not wanting to talk about it. Not until I had time to myself, and definitely not in front of imposter Derek. I needed to sort through my own messy feelings. We should let Greg and, Matt go on their run.
Right,
Greg said reluctantly, his eyes moving past me to his wife, adding a few seconds later, let's go. The tall Brit's frown was severe. He didn't look at Matt as he turned, merely gesturing for the shorter man to follow while he disappeared down the hall. Matt moved his dispassionate stare from Janie, and his eyes collided with mine once more. I lifted my chin, glaring at him. He gave me a tight smile and then left, following Greg.
Don't listen to him, Marie. Ashley raised her voice after the front door closed, forcing my attention to the laptop screen. Her face filled the entire space. That guy is what we call a douche canoe.
You should move.
Janie turned her grumpy expression on Fiona as Alex removed his hands, no longer needing to restrain her, and stuffed them in his pockets. He traded a sideways glance with his wife.
Otherwise, Janie continued, I might be forced to punch that guy in the throat.
Fiona inspected me for a short moment, then gave Janie a weary smile as Sandra and Elizabeth reclaimed their seats.
Actually, we are moving. We've been putting it off for months, but with the baby, we'll do it within the next year. This place is too small for 5 people.
Move to our building, Elizabeth suggested, sneaking me a surreptitious glance while she addressed Fiona.
You know, Quinn would love having you close by so he can pick your ninja brain more often.
Quinn, Janie's husband, ran a wildly successful global security firm and owned several floors in a building overlooking Grant Park. The apartments were reserved for employees of his firm, but Elizabeth and Nico lived in one of the penthouses, as did Janie and Quinn. As Alex worked for Quinn's corporate subsidiary, Cypher Systems, he and Sandra also lived in the building. Fiona had also recently accepted a contract position with Cypher Systems.
Then Greg can go jogging with Quinn instead of that douche canoe.
Janie mumbled, her lip curled into a subtle snarl as she rubbed her lower back. If I hadn't been so off-kilter and preoccupied by recent events, I might have laughed. Truly, Janie had become a different person over the last few months. As though reading my mind, Elizabeth piped in. Jeez Louise, Janie. It's like carrying Quinn's baby has turned you into a replica of his grumpy ass. Pretty soon you'll be giving us all the ice stare and quoting Dirty Harry movies.
Quinn doesn't quote Dirty Harry movies.
Janie wrinkled her nose at Elizabeth.
He doesn't need to, because that's how he talks in real life.
Elizabeth's teasing statement drew chuckles from everyone except me.
I tried, but I didn't laugh this time.
Couldn't.
Thankfully, the subject changed provided an opportunity to dart out of the room to refill Janie's water.
Walking into the kitchen, I ran the faucet and sighed. I was having trouble swallowing, unable to move past Derek/Matt's notion that nothing about me was unique. Nothing was special. I was nothing special. My eyes caught on my reflection in the dark window over the sink. I had blonde hair. My skin was beige. I was wearing my tan sweater dress. I was struck by my monochromatic blandness. Did the inside reflect the outside?
Chapter 4. Kitten and Brune's TWSS System. A statistical machine learning algorithm to detect whether a sentence contains a "that's what she said" double entendre. Source: Funniest Computer Ever Open Source Initiative. Several events over the next week transformed my melancholy into rage. First of all, men were idiots. Let's just get that out of the way. Second, I was propositioned by my building manager. He was married, with children. Third, I'd neglected to deactivate my findyourpartner.com account after the date from hell, so when I logged in 5 days later, there were 3 new messages, all of them containing dick pics.
Scratch that. All of them containing underwhelming dick pics. I mean, if you're gonna send a woman a dick pic, at least send something worth seeing, not a gherkin dwarfed by hairy potatoes. And finally, my ex, who I hadn't spoken to in over a year, invited me to his engagement party. His engagement party. To another woman. There I was, minding my own business, opening my mail while waiting for a conference call to start. I was at work, sitting at my desk. As a contract writer, I could work from home. I'd tried doing just that for a few years, but found the isolation to be counterproductive to my mental health. Therefore, I joined an office co-op near the Loop a few years back. Basically, it's an office, like any other office environment, except most of us don't work together, or even in the same field. We shared the same public space, used the same copy machine, the same break room, etc. I liked the dynamics and environment of working in an office. Not only did it get me out of my pajamas, it gave me the opportunity to have normal discussions around a water cooler with other working professionals. Glancing impassively at the envelope, because it had looked like any other envelope, I noticed my address had been handwritten. I didn't recognize the handwriting, nor had a return address been visible. Tearing into it serenely, I listened as others joined the call. It took reading the invitation 5 times before I fully comprehended what it was. And by the time complete understanding settled in, my rage was out of control, especially since the party wasn't for 6 months. Who does that? Who sends an invite for a party that far in advance? I focused on that minute and meaningless detail because the rest of my feelings felt too unwieldy to examine. Unfortunately, it was also time for the call to start. Okay, is everyone here? Daniela, my editor, queried the line, forcing me to stem my decidedly unpleasant gush of emotions. Marie, Chicago, I said through gritted teeth when it was my turn, then muted my line just in case the urge to scream became uncontrollable. You're invited. David Carter and Gwen Livingston cordially invite you to attend their engagement party on November 17th. Please RSVP by August 17th with number of guests. Will you be bringing a date? Yes or no? I flipped the card over and winced at the picture of David and his fiancée, my heart beating sluggishly for the span of several seconds. We need content for the tech issue. It's running 30 pages light. Anyone have a pitch? Daniela tossed the question out to the group. Meanwhile, I was still glaring at the picture of my ex and his fiancée. They were looking at each other, gazing into each other's eyes with blatant adoration, and they were so, so happy. Brr! Tearing my eyes away, I glanced at the writing on the envelope, the decidedly swirly cursive. It must have been hers. Who does that? Who invites their fiancé's ex-girlfriend to her engagement party?
What about dildos, vibrators?
This question came from Terry Ruiz, field writer at the Los Angeles office.
We could do a compare and contrast of what's out there, latest technological advancements in the field.
Give me something other than dildos and vibrators, please, for the love of God. Daniela moaned. I'm so tired of dildos.
What about online dating?
Tommy Jang asked, his tone hesitant. He was relatively new to the Los Angeles office. I'd never met him in person, but we'd spoken over the phone a number of times. One-on-one, he was hilarious, but he hadn't yet found his footing on the conference calls.
What about it? Daniela pressed. What's the angle?
Pew Research Center compiled a summary of surprising statistics about online dating, with growing numbers of people in a committed relationship or married having met online. We could take a look at how online dating, the technology behind it, has improved over the years and future directions for continued advancement.
Daniela paused, and I knew what that pause meant. It meant she liked the idea, but didn't want him to write the piece. At least not by himself.
Marie, are you on?
I unmuted my line, breathing out silently before saying, "Yep, I'm here."
"Can you partner on this with Tommy?" she asked, confirming my suspicions. Crap.
It was no secret that I was Daniela's favorite. If she had an idea for a story, she always passed it by me first. She told me many times that I demonstrated a commitment to understanding, to truly living an experience before writing about it that was rare these days, and that difference showed in my finished articles. I appreciated her compliments and her faith in me, but it often meant she wanted me to take the lead on someone else's story. It's not that I didn't want to write the piece with Tommy. What I knew about Tommy, I liked. Rather, it was that this piece was his idea. He deserved the opportunity to write it on his own, to prove himself. However, before I could pitch a different idea or make an excuse, Tommy piped up.
"I'd love to work with Murray on this, if she has time."
I frowned at my phone and bit my lip, feeling torn. On the one hand, he sounded completely sincere. On the other hand, it was his idea, his story. Unable to delay any longer without inviting an uncomfortable silence, I said, "Yes, absolutely, sounds good."
"Great, it's settled. Anyone else?"
Daniela asked, and the call moved on. Twisting my lips to the side, I muted my line and returned my attention to the photograph of David and his betrothed. Perversely, I wondered if they'd met online, and if he'd been her perfect match. Continuing to quietly stew for the remainder of the call, I felt relieved when it ended. What this situation called for was nail polish. I owned too many nail polishes, it's true. I freely admitted this. Worst of all, I hardly ever painted my nails. I'd use a bottle once, usually as therapy to get over a funk, but then never used the color again. Yet nothing made me feel better, quite like fancy nails.
"Marie, wait!"
I twisted at the waist, checking to see who'd called my name, and found Camille Yardley jogging to catch up with me. Turning around to meet her, I smiled warmly.
"Hey, are you grabbing lunch?"
Camille was a contract engineer and hardly made it into the shared office space, as she frequently traveled all over the world for her job.
"No, nail polish. I packed my lunch."
I tilted my head toward the break room. "I'm on a budget, but I'll eat with you if you grab takeout." I tried to sweeten the deal with a large smile.
"Ha, sounds good. I skipped breakfast and my date last night was so terrible I lost my appetite halfway through."
She rolled her eyes and my big grin became a smaller one of pure sympathy.
"I'm sorry, that sucks."
"Yeah, well, it's okay." Abruptly, she shook her head, heaving a sigh.
"Actually, it's not okay. Mind if we walk together?"
"No, no, feel free. I'm just going to the drugstore across the street." We fell into step on the way to the elevator.
"Do you want to talk about it?"
She didn't require any further prompting.
"Yes, I do. I'm just so damn frustrated. Where are all the men? And I don't mean man children. I mean men. You know, the guys whose interests extend beyond playing Halo on their Xbox and who actually make eye contact and aren't constantly scanning the room for a better option. This guy last night left me at the table to go hit on a woman at the bar."
I grimaced because that was bad. Really, really bad.
Wow, what a jerk.
Camille heaved another sigh just as we stepped onto the elevator, and this one sounded watery.
"I just, you know, would like to find a nice, normal guy. Someone who treats me with respect, like a person. I don't ask for much. Don't you think it's mind-blowing?"
I could definitely empathize.
"What's that?"
I asked right on cue. I'd heard this speech from Camille before and knew what she was going to say.
"Things that ought to be just a normal part of being a healthy adult are considered praiseworthy, and that drives me bonkers."
She began ticking them off on her fingers.
being employed, not being an addict, treating your parents well, not being in massive debt, being considerate, being educated, or at the very least, informed. I must know 100 single women who check all those boxes, and 100 men in relationships already who check all those boxes, but not one unattached guy. Not one. I nodded, maintaining my sympathetic looks, feeling her pain. As much as possible, when relating my online debacles to my friends, I tried to keep my dating stories limited to those that were hilarious or outrageous. This was because the rest of my stories were disheartening, depressing, and sad, like Camille's story. And no one in a happy relationship wants to hear